This is a National Museum of Australia recording. For more information, visit nma.gov.au/audio.
Hi everyone. Welcome to the final Landmark Women of the Year. Thank you everybody who has attended to so many fantastic talks this year. It's been a really great program. Please enjoy this talk this morning with Diane and Katrina Vignato to introduce Diane. Thank you guys.
Thank you, Carice. As you know, many of you have met me before. I'm the acting manager here at the museum in the development area, and the development area manages the Friends program and the membership program and our patrons and supporters program. And it's one of the nicest aspects of my job to be able to introduce our landmark speakers monthly on a Friday. So it is with great pleasure that I'm here with you today to, as Carice said, introduce our final landmark speaker for the year before we go into a change of program with Encounters. As Carice said, it's really jam-packed. Having Diane here with us today as our landmark speaker. And before I introduce her, I just wanted to reflect a little bit on, you know, the recent activities that have been happening in the world. You're all hearing, you know, the horrible outcomes of these terrorist threats that have impacted on people's lives in Paris and in Lebanon. And these kinds of activities really begin to instill a sense of fear-mongering in many of us. An outcome of these events, it becomes easy to lose sense of what is good in our society. We just focus on this negativity and it completely changes the way we think. So in presenting today's speaker, it's a really wonderful opportunity for us to actually recalibrate that thinking and look at what is good in our society, what are the wonderful things that do happen. And Diane is certainly at the foray of that thinking and pushing people into that area. Her extensive career as a senior advisor and community advocate, Diane has not been afraid to ask the question of how can I, as an individual, make a difference for the greater good? What can we do in our backyard that will make things better for people? How can we participate to improve the world around us? These are fundamental questions that I'm sure we each ask ourselves at different times when such things happen in the world around us. And Diane has not only asked these questions of herself and others, but she's also found solutions and set up programs that have made a significant difference to people's lives. And I'll just give you a little rundown of her extensive biography that she will elaborate on more fully as she comes up and presents and speaks with us today. Diane has over 37 years experience working in both the community sector within the ACT, working with Commonwealth Public Service, and she has held senior positions in those roles. More recently, she has been an executive coach and facilitator for government, for private business and not-for-profit organisations. She's passionately committed to building social capital in the Canberra community and in the ACT region. And as an outcome of that, she has founded the Capital Region Community Foundation, Greater Good, which is for the benefit of the Canberra region into the future. Diane has taken on many roles as a trustee of companies and programs, and she is currently the trustee and administrator of the Canberra Bushfire Recovery Appeal that supports the victims of the January 2003 bushfires. In 2004, she was the recipient of the Australian of the Year ACT Local Hero Award for all her great work that she has done in community, and she has also been acknowledged with an Order of Australia for her work. She is now a member of the Order of Australia. She is retired from public, from working in the public service, but people like Diane never really retire and always continue to participate in community activities. The list of her engagements with both cultural and community organisations is extensive. And it is my great pleasure to invite Diane up to the stage and give us all a little bit more of a background of what it is that has driven her passions for encouraging us to look at the world in a better way and to contribute to making things better. Diane, thank you.
Well, thank you for that lovely introduction, and thank you for inviting me to speak this morning to your last Landmark Women talk. And I'm going to talk a little bit, and then we're going to have a four-minute film, a little video, that will show you a different side of Canberra and a side of Canberra that perhaps we don't see as often as we should. But before I do that, it is a pleasure to speak to you today. I recently had the pleasure of listening to Rosie Batty speak in this very room, and it feels rather daunting to be speaking about my life, having heard hers. Having acknowledged that, I thought that I would break my talk into three areas to sort of, I think, bring us to where I am doing what I'm doing in Canberra today, because I think the learnings of my journey have actually directed me without me knowing to what I'm doing. So what matters to me are family, community, philanthropy, making a difference. I think if I was to describe myself with one word, it would be open. I'm open to ideas, and I'm very keen to see what the future could look like. So, should we have the video? I think Ken's up there. Thank you. So this is about 4 minutes, and it's one of a series of three.
Today there is effectively no affordable housing available in Canberra. As a result...
We'll talk more about that later, but it's just an insight into things that we walk around town and we just don't see. But let me start. Firstly, I have a wonderful husband, Adrian. We married in 2002. We have a blended family of six amazing adult children, all who live in the region or on the Gold Coast. We have 9 wonderful grandchildren from 8 to 28 and 2 beautiful great-granddaughters, 7 and 8 months. I grew up in Adelaide, one of 4 children for Lyle and Betty Coburn. I had 2 older brothers. Kevin was 5 years older, Alan a year and a day older, and a sister, Carolyn, who was 9 years my junior. Growing up in our family was firm but caring, very supportive. My mother was definitely the authority figure, my dad the peacemaker. Memories of my mother... Well, she was firm but kind, but very interested in the community. It was an interesting mix, I thought, and she was one of an amazing team of dedicated people in Adelaide that raised funds to build the emergency wing of the Adelaide Children's Hospital. So I grew up always understanding that busy, committed people could do lots for their community. As I grew, I used to spend spare time visiting a nursing home in our area. My mother thought this was interesting, but never ever stopped me doing it. I used to go along and I'd pick flowers from people's gardens along the way. And I remember one couple who used to say, stop doing that. And I said what I was doing it for, and then after that they were often there ready with flowers picked for me to take to the nursing home. And I would talk to the residents and take flowers and listen to their stories, and they resonated with me. A lot of my friends said, you know, why on earth would you do that when we could be outside having fun? For me, it was fun. I was encouraged to think of others while I was growing up, wherever possible. I guess we were pretty much a middle-class family. But I think it was also unusual that both my parents had their own businesses. Mum in her early years was a kindergarten teacher, and after the war, Dad left the Air Force and became an auto electrician. He did amazing things and built these tremendous little gadgets that allowed people with disabilities to still drive their cars. Sadly, we never copyrighted any of them. We all did our time working in the business. We cleaned the office space. We did the books. We did the typing. It was a great time, but again, Mum was in charge. Later, Mum opened her own health food shop, and she remained passionate about healthy eating all her life. From a young age, I was given a lot of responsibility, looking after my older brothers and my younger sister as she grew. By the time I was 11, I was cooking a number of the meals at home and doing some of the housework. I recall one day that we had just had our home remodelled and a new kitchen built on and a family room on the side. We also had this new invention called a pressure cooker. My brother Alan and I thought we'd cook a lamb stew and it would be a great treat for the family with the new pressure cooker. When the cooker did its thing and released the steam, I thought, it's ready. Guess what I did? I undid the lid, and chops and stew went everywhere. I had chops hanging from the ceiling light in our new kitchen. It was very hot, and we both had burns. We also had a hole in the ceiling where the cooker lid landed. This was not one of our better nights at home, but we learned. For me, I still love cooking, but I've never had the inclination to use one of those things ever again, even though they are so popular with the cooking shows. Our childhood was filled with lots of adventure. Mum and Dad loved camping. Dad built his own caravan. And it was terrific when there was an opportunity to get away. As kids, Dad would draw a circle around South Australia or wider, depending on the time we had. And as kids, we'd take turns in shutting our eyes and putting a pin in the map. If it was your turn, that's where we'd go. And you had to work out how to get there and what did we need for the journey. It was all about being sustainable, I think. Dad also collected and was passionate about stamps and first aid covers. Once we pulled the caravan all the way to Adamitaby in New South Wales, left the van, drove up to Mount Kosciuszko, right to the very top when you could, back in those early 50s and early 60s, just to post a letter with his wonderful Santa postmark. Then we drove back to Adamitaby and then back to Adelaide. I never much liked school. My brother Alan and I were sent to a number of schools, Mum desperately trying to find one that supported us. I always thought I was not very clever. I did excel at sports. I played hockey, softball, and was very good at gymnastics. I did consider the circus at one point. However, seriously, from a young age, I always wanted to be a nurse. I knew I needed to finish my intermediate levels to actually achieve this. I stayed at home till I was 15 and a half and then was able to be enrolled as a nurse aide in a country hospital. I started my proper training at 16 at Victor Harbour Hospital out of Adelaide, a little country hospital, all part of growing up. If my children wanted to leave home at 15, I'd have been horrified. My brother, at 15, went off to Wagga to the Air Force. So, again, you know, we were encouraged to actually look after ourselves. I have vivid memories of my first weeks at the Victor Harbour Hospital, caring for people and being on duty in our hospital morgue. That was a learning curve. I learned how fragile life was. I found that so many of the older patients and their families used the hospital much like a waiting place for when they were trying to get longer-term placements for their loved ones. I found it very sad. Victor Harbour is a holiday town and a farming coastal area, so visitation was often ad hoc because most of the families were busy with their farms. Again, I spent much of my spare time talking to the residents and taking them out for a walk to the beach if they were able. I loved nursing. I learned many things about life and loneliness. I used to write home letters. Now, Victor Harbour is about 50 kilometres from Adelaide, but back in the 60s it was a very long way away. So I used to write home about life at the hospital. My mother kept the letters and she said that she would read them when she was sad and they would cheer her. She thought they would make a very funny book. Before I went nursing, I met a young man, Manuel, a very charismatic Greek boy from Adelaide. I just turned 15, he was 18. I have to say, this didn't sit too well with my mother. He's not living on our side of town, and his parents had little English. Mum thought distance and the Victor Harbour Hospital would sort that out, but it didn't. It was with some great sadness and a sense of relief for Mum when we wanted to get married. I needed parental permission. I wasn't 18. In fact, I was 18 days short of my 18th birthday on my wedding day, and sadly pregnant. Manuel, now 21, had been offered a move to Canberra with the Department of Army. That was in the June 1965. We married in the July, and I followed in the August. I left behind my nursing studies. You couldn't be a nurse and be married back then, how times have progressed. I arrived in Canberra on a very, very cold August day with my case, a few wedding presents, and a little puppy, a toy poodle, Tony. Manuel had rented a two-bedroom, fully furnished house in Braddon. It's still standing proud amongst the high-rise. We had no car, no money, no phone, most of all, no family, and I had no friends. I have strong memories of saying to Manuel, we did agree this was for just 2 years. Canberra soon became home. I couldn't work as Deborah was born in the January in one of the green prefab buildings on this very block of land. Later on, I took in washing and ironing for the service stations in Braddon. It was hard and heavy work. My early life in Canberra was mostly keeping house, raising Deborah, my washing and my ironing, and some volunteer work for the Red Cross for older people in their homes and those with disabilities that needed support on evenings and weekends. Most satisfying was helping an elderly neighbour with her profoundly disabled daughter. We traded for her time out. I still remember the first day that she had time out. She didn't know where to go or what to do, and she cried. For me, it was the use of her phone once a week to ring home. In 1968, Manuel was posted to Vietnam. Stephen was born while he was away and was 8 months old when they met. Not long after he was back, he was invited to go on the HMAS Sydney. He did two tours on that. He enjoyed travel and did it well. In late 1969, we were offered a wonderful opportunity to go to Singapore with the ANZUC forces. We stayed 4.5 years. I was 23 when we arrived with my two young children. This was a wonderful time where I learned about living in the culture with the Singaporeans. We decided that if we were going, we would live in the community and not behind secure compounds. I learned to cook Asian food. I made lifelong friends and had wonderful time with the children. I was determined that we would learn what we could from the Singapore culture and the community and engage wherever possible. Having an AMA in Singapore allowed me to volunteer at the local hospital and at the local school. While Singapore was a time of great reflection, I'd had a number of health issues. My first pregnancy in Singapore ended abruptly with a late miscarriage when I was 5 months. The following year, I gave birth to Melissa Ann, a little girl. She lived for 4 days. As it passed, Melissa had a rare genetic heart disease. In fact, I understood she was the 8th diagnosed in the world at that time. As it happened, a number of paediatricians were making their way from overseas to Australia for a conference, and they stopped in Singapore when they heard about Melissa and came to see her. When she died, they wanted to do an autopsy. With my grief, and I suspect my young age, I wouldn't approve it. Now, I think I would think differently. Dealing with the death of a baby at such a young age and in a country that was predominantly Buddhist had its challenges. But again, I moved on. Living outside the Anzac area showed its first problem. I had to actually register Melissa as an Australian citizen to get a birth certificate before I could get a death certificate. All very traumatic. My specialist's advice was not to have any more children. But I don't know if any of you've been to Singapore in those early days, but one specialist said crossing Orchard Road is like taking your life in your own hands. It's a risk. I was thankful for that advice. And Vanessa was born 15 months later, healthy but very tiny. Home from Singapore, now settled back into Canberra, for some time I decided I wanted to get back in the workforce. Not that I'd ever really been in it. Not daunted by my lack of qualifications and support from Manuel, I put together a CV and put in for a job with the Belconnen Community Service. I recall vividly, it was a Sunday morning and my 30th birthday, and I was invited for an interview with the entire Belconnen Community Service Board of 17 members. Very scary, and I was very nervous, a bit like today. Even more surprisingly, I got a second interview and got the job, with one of the board members saying, "We don't really want you. We wanted a kindergarten teacher or a qualified nurse." And I thought, right. I was so excited and so proud, I rang Manuel, who was now working in Perth, and said I'd been offered the job. And his response was, "I hope you turned it down." Of course I didn't, and life was a little tense for a while. Sadly, I hadn't realised that Manuel liked me being at home, and he thought, with no qualifications, that I would be unemployable. I say never underestimate a woman who's ready to go into the workforce, no matter what her qualifications are. I was shown a very large concrete slab in the Belconnen Mall that was being built and nearly finished at the time, and was told that a childcare centre was due to be opened in 3 months. Clearly there was much to be done. What had I done raced across my brain. The centre was an interesting concept. It was simple, providing 3 hours free time for parents to shop in the mall. This was the first of its kind in Canberra. It didn't take me long to realise that parents needed time out more than they needed time to shop. They needed space to recover, to sleep, to have appointments, and often I believe they needed someone to talk to. So I contacted the head of the legal aid office and asked if they'd consider setting up a free legal advice office in the centre. The Belconnen Community Service and Family Daycare were already there. After many conversations, legal aid agreed to trial it one afternoon a month. They moved from once a month to a permanent office for many years. I found myself keeping a range of appointment books, one for the children's attendants, one for appointments with legal aid, and one for other appointments that I made for people. The program was most successful, and I think the organisation supported parents and carers when they needed it. Hopefully some of the parents shopped. That settled, I noticed, or began to notice, that we never had children with disabilities in the centre. This was a harder challenge, but one that was overcome with months of negotiation and some legal hurdles. The relief from parents to have a break was worth all the roadblocks to get the program approved. I still see some of the parents and children, now adults, as I go about town, and clearly remember the smiles on their faces of the children having time out. Today we wouldn't expect anything different, but in the late 70s and early 80s, things were different. I say again, what a long way we've come as a community. Determination and conviction is the key for getting things done. I have truckloads of it when I think there's a better way. In my early 40s, and with my marriage failing, I decided to go to university. A daunting prospect. So I enrolled at night school and started with year 11 and 12 before I tackled university. My thinking was, if I'm going to end up being a single parent, I better get a degree. Around this time, Manuel, who was the most amazing, clever man that I had met, he excelled in everything he did. He resigned from a very senior role in the public service, but he was unsettled. He dabbled in lots of jobs, but then he took on a very important role to help rebuild Cambodia, and this was for 4 months. Sadly for me, it ended our marriage because he was there for many, many, many years. Our marriage didn't survive, but we are great friends today. After speaking to the children about my decision, I thought I'd better tell my mother before the family grapevine got to her first. I flew to Adelaide. I took her to lunch at her favourite cafe and told her my news. And she said in all seriousness, but with a hint of a smile, I told you it wouldn't last. I rather thought 30 years was a pretty good effort. I feel very fortunate to have loved every work role I've held. Following the childcare centre, I was invited to take on a role with the Legal Aid Office. I progressed to be the business manager. I had the privilege of being the public trustee for the ACT. My role was one that had, I think, had the best client base in the world. Everybody that used the public trustee had a disability or a need of some kind that couldn't be met by family or friends. I wanted to develop ways to highlight these amazing people, and I considered lots of ideas, but decided upon a photographic competition that showcased our older citizens and those with disabilities. The competition, Life's Reflection, is now 11 or 12 years old and firmly entrenched in Seniors Week. A theme is emerging that community is important to me, and building strong communities remains a goal. And as part of that discussion with a colleague, we talked about the concept of a charitable trust, a new way of addressing the charitable need in Canberra. I saw so many people leaving bequests in their wills, but often the money was heading off to Sydney or Melbourne to head office, and we weren't keeping those funds in Canberra. I thought, I'm sure that's what donors wanted, but these things are not always well articulated in the will. So I talked to a number of people, businesses, charities, a lot of Canberra people. One of them is sitting here in the front row today, all helped me on a journey of how to make charities in Canberra more sustainable. What we did was we developed Greater Good. Greater Good is a community foundation for the community, by the community, with the public trustee as the administrator of the funds. It was established in 2003, just before the devastating bushfires. I remember well on the Sunday night of the bushfires, the Chief Minister, John Stanhope, rang me at home and asked if I would attend a meeting on Monday morning with the Commonwealth Bank and an established community board with a view to running the bushfire appeal. My brief was simple. What support could I offer as governance for the money? It seemed natural at the time. I already had the deeds for Greater Good. All we needed to do was to get the ATO to approve the same set of deeds for the Canberra Bushfire Recovery Appeal. After a little bit of to-ing and fro-ing, they did so. I took on the appeal, I wonder why sometimes, and a board, this time not 17 members, 23. It was a daunting task, and I wonder if I had time to think about it, what would I have done? Would I have made those same choices? I suspect the answer is yes. It was a privilege to work with the community on the appeal, to listen to their stories and support them as best we could, getting back on their feet. I worked for 106 days without a break. I was often asked, why didn't you take a break? The answer was easy. The chair of the appeal, Bishop George Browning, said in a media briefing, with great confidence, that we would start sending out the money before Easter and it would all be gone by Christmas. I was listening and thought, Easter, that's 6 weeks away. Wow. I'm sure I said other things as well. I didn't think we'd collected enough money, and I didn't want to let those that needed the money down. So we worked extra, extra hard, and we made the deadline, and we made all future deadlines. And the appeal for most people was a great success. The team of volunteers were the heart of the appeal, and the community has much to thank them for. In 2004, as you've heard, I was voted the ACT Local Hero in the Australian of the Year Awards. This remains a great honour and one I cherish with all those volunteers that have worked with me through that difficult time in Canberra's history. With the bushfire wound up, I was able to focus again on greater good. Again, there were calls to lawyers, colleagues, accountants, financial advisers, who I'm sure have now forgiven me for my boldness, but they did provide me with opportunities to talk to their client base about the opportunity of becoming a leader, to be a philanthropist, supporting our wonderful community. Many of these people see me now promoting a range of other good causes, and I bet some of them duck. The catalyst for me to leave my public trustee role was a citizen who had rung me and said, I've heard about greater good, I like the concept, I like the idea of the public trustee being the trustee, but I want to give my money to the community side of the program, not a public servant. That night, I went home, cooked a lovely dinner, had a chat with Adrian and said, I think I have to fall on my sword here. I resigned. A couple of weeks later, I received a cheque from this great citizen after a coffee and a chat. Greater good was on its way. I was the honorary executive officer for over 5 years. It was an amazing opportunity to learn about Canberra. I often think I do things without much thought. Clearly, I didn't think that one through. It didn't take me long to realise I had no money coming in. I wonder how many women here today think about things, make their decision, and then go through, what did I do? I didn't have any shopping money. But then again, I didn't have time to shop. Greater Good had grown from an idea to now a fund, a perpetual fund that has $15 million in its corpus. Most of that money stays in and around the Canberra region and helps those smaller charities and those not-for-profits. One of the big things about small charities is they spend so much of their time and resources putting in sausage sizzles and fundraisings and walks around the lake that they're not actually putting their time into what they can be doing best, and that's the job that the community have put them there for, to help the people that they look after. So Greater Good helps many of those with an annual gift that just arrives like a Christmas gift. In late 2009, 2010 was a bittersweet time for me and my family. I'd received a letter from the Governor-General's office in September stating that I'd been nominated for an Order of Australia Award, and if I was successful, Would I accept it? It was a shock and it was unexpected. I didn't know who would have done it and I still don't know today. And you have to keep it a secret until Australia Day. A few days later, on a Saturday morning, I'd had this nagging cough for some weeks and I had been doing some work facilitating with major groups. I was worried I might be infectious. So I had an appointment with the locum at my local doctor's surgery. Blood tests were ordered. The next day, Sunday, I'd had children sleeping overnight, grandchildren, and family coming for breakfast. And I was off delivering the grandchildren to sport when I got a phone call on my mobile, which I couldn't pick up because I was driving. When I got home, there was a phone call at home, and Adrian said, "There's a pathologist who I really can't understand, wants you to ring him." So I rang, and he said, "I can't get hold of your doctor, but you should go to casualty immediately." And I thought, right, it's the cough. I made breakfast, and Vanessa and I presented to casualty. As I had a cough, and it was quite evident when I walked in I had a cough, we all had masks slapped on our faces and we were put in an isolation room. It was very cold. I had thought, because I'm put in this room, that I've self-diagnosed, I've got whooping cough. Isn't the internet wonderful? Some 4 hours later, many blood tests and many other tests, a young female registrar came in and I asked, "Did I have whooping cough?" She gave a little chuckle and then said with some seriousness, "Oh no, take off your mask. Your blood's leukemic." And she walked out. And I thought, that was a bit of a shock. I wondered, what did it mean? Why me? But more especially, not now, I'm too busy. Soon the registrar came back. This time she had an internet printout and gave it to me and said, "This would help you understand your disease and treatment." And again, she left. By then, Vanessa had rustled the family. They were all there. And a nurse came in and I asked, "What do I do? Can I go home? How do I find out about a specialist?" And she said, "Oh no, you're being admitted. You can't go anywhere." How quickly life and priorities change. I spent the next 6 days in oncology working through what needed to be done. I met a wonderful haematology specialist who remains my doctor today. He is wise and supportive. CML was rare in Canberra at that time, and I agreed to be the first person on the CML Title II trial. The trial is part of my life. It doesn't define me. What it does, though, is makes me think about what is important. I've been grateful for that lesson. I'm so lucky. I have a wonder drug which I take every morning, and life goes on. A few months later, Vanessa, who had been unwell, had been seeking answers. She was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma, and her journey with chemo sessions every fortnight for 9 months began. We were a great team. Having Vanessa and I on our health journeys at the same time certainly gave me and our family great focus. Vanessa is back on track. I continue to take my chemo medication every morning and continue to have a busy and fulfilling life. One of the positive things out of this is that Adrian and I have an annual overseas holiday. This is a bonus. Before being diagnosed, Adrian thought a trip to the coast was all we ever needed. There's always a silver lining. In January 2010, I was awarded an AAM, a member of the Order of Australia. This is a truly great honour, and the investiture at Government House was an amazing day for me and the family and a highlight in a very difficult time. A wise person once said, "Community recognition or recognition by your peers is the beginning of your community work, not a reward for the end." This seems true for me. What matters? The community in the region remain a great passion. I believe community, we can work together to be more resilient and sustainable, but still there's a lot to be done. What I mean by this is we could just sit back and rely on government to fix the problems. But realistically, I think we all know government no longer has the money. Or we as individuals or as a community have an opportunity or indeed a responsibility to help where we can with what I say, our time, our treasure and our talent, or all three. I believe we can all be philanthropists, no matter what our financial position. I currently support many charities and not-for-profits. Here is some of what I'm doing now. I'm chair of the ACT Cemetery Authority, with the challenge of raising awareness and the need for funds to build a cemetery, a memorial park in the Tuggeranong area, finding more room at Woden so it doesn't have to close in a couple of years, looking for business opportunities, especially as a community we seem to favour cremation instead of burial. We've just launched an extension to the mausoleum at Woden. It's an historic building, it's a beautiful building, and you should all go and have a look at it. Again, it's a great honour to lead a community board for a very important community need. The video we saw, homelessness is a major issue for Canberra. I'm part of a dedicated group with a bold vision to reduce homelessness. Canberra has the second rate of homelessness in Australia behind the Northern Territory. I think a dreadful statistic for such a beautiful city. Common Ground is a model developed by a woman called Roseanne Haggerty in New York. An inspiring woman in Canberra, Elizabeth Dawson OAM, who you saw in the video, sadly died last October. A very sad day for Canberra. Believe that we, as a community, can and will begin the journey to end homelessness. After 6 years of raising awareness and money, Common Ground is built and is thriving in Gungahlin with 46 residents. There are 40 one-bedroom apartments. They are beautiful. These residents are making a thriving community in Gungahlin, and it's a pleasure to spend time with them. The model's a simple one. You give people a home first, and then you add on-site support and tenancy services and 24-hour security or concierge to help them make really good choices when some of the choices might be the wrong ones. To date, four of the formerly homeless residents have already found employment. When I ask them what worked, they say, "I've got an address." They show me their mailbox. I have a home. I was given support to put together a CV. Someone cared. I still get emotional. I'm the deputy chair of Hands Across Canberra. It's 5 years old. It's an umbrella charity that links business, charities, government and individuals across Canberra and for human charities who struggle for funds, and it provides expertise and money. It provides support in a range of ways and aims to build recognition of the charity's work with business and government and individuals who want to contribute but are not sure how or where they should put their time, treasure and talent. I support the Boundless Playground in Kings Park, on another part of this beautiful peninsula. An amazing structure for all children, parents, grandparents, carers, whatever their ability, to come and enjoy a play area that may well have been out of their reach previously. We're raising money and awareness to put in more play equipment for more children with disabilities and a cafe, so that as parents and visitors to this beautiful town can get a coffee and play at the park. I want the playground to be an important destination, as important as visiting the museum or the other icons on the lake. What's left to do? Making philanthropy part of everyday life through workplace giving, providing opportunities for people to give, asking people what they would like to give to, and indeed make each and every one of us a philanthropist. In summing up, I believe my journey and my own inner strength and openness to ideas has kept me strong and guided me along the way. It supports and strengthens me to believe I can, and we all can, make a difference in our community. For me, I've been fortunate to meet some amazing people along the way. Again, one of them is sitting here, who've given me encouragement to take the opportunity to try. I believe that if we're passionate about something, we can make it happen. It might be quick or it might take a while, but we need to be ready for the opportunity. As friends of the museum, you're already great supporters of the museum and possibly other great causes or institutions. I have a view that most of us can do more and perhaps should do more, but where do we spread our time, treasure or talent? And how do we assess what we do and does it make a difference? I believe much of my journey, which has never been told before today, is one that assisted me greatly in the choices I've made. I'd like to leave you with a quote from former President Bill Clinton from his book, Giving. Almost everyone, regardless of income, age, available time and skills, can do something useful for others and, in the process, strengthen the fabric of our shared community. This quote, I'm sure, is true for each of you, and I hope you are a little challenged to ask more about what you can do to build the social structure of this wonderful museum and Canberra and the region more widely. Thank you again for inviting me here today.
It's not so much a question, it's more a statement, just to say, Di, I met you 2002 when I came back to Canberra, and when you were a public trustee, it was a great honour for me to become involved with you on greater good and to learn from you and to develop my philanthropic thoughts, which I thought I was doing really well with. I've learnt so much from you. You have been very inspiring. And I think one of the things that I remember you saying early on was simply that, one of the things you learnt, that people need to be asked. We're going on a journey, and that's one of the things I've learnt with you. We're going on a journey. And the most important thing is someone saying, what journey do you want to go on? How can we go on that journey together? What can we achieve? And just listening to you again just reminded me of many things I learned from you and with you on the journey we've been on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Does anyone else have any questions at this stage? I think we're all...
Everyone's contemplating.
They are. Yes, we do have one over there, Sophia.
Dan, I see many... beggars in Canberra, especially around Civic and the shopping malls in Warden and Belconnen. And other than putting a coin or two in their collection box, I don't know what else can I do, you know?
It's a really hard thing. When I went on the journey for Common Ground, my original thought was that there are 28 people who sleep really rough in Canberra every night. There are 28 that are known to government, and there are nearly 2,000 that we know sleep rough, but we don't quite know where they are. The ones in town, their needs are so complex that putting them in a house wouldn't work. And so government, in its own way, supports them in the community. I have given up giving money. What I do is I chat to them. Not every time I go to town, but I chat, and I often say, would you like a coffee or would you like a hamburger? And I will take them something. I think Some of the people who beg in town actually have incomes. And it's really hard to know, are you doing the right thing? So for some, it's a conversation. For some, I get food. A little story. When I was public trustee, there's an organisation, a tribunal, called the Guardianship and Management of Property. And I, as public trustee, was given an order to take care of a man on the streets, put him in a home, look after his money and get him back on track. Now, I met this man and it clearly was not what he wanted. And it took me a long time to work with this man. He couldn't come into my office because he was claustrophobic about going in a lift. Nobody asked him, what did he want? We just made an order that said, we know what he wants. And so sometimes we have to ask a question about what can I do to help? And if it is that they need a service, then find out what those services might be and come back another time. Here's a phone number that might help you. It's very hard. But I think we are, in Canberra, starting to make a difference. Common ground is a great start. I get phone calls saying, when are we going to get one on the north side? And when are we going to get one in Tuggeranong? I hope soon. But they all cost a lot of money. So I'm not sure if that answers fully your question, but it's very hard. But I think just caring for them as best we can is good. Saying hello.
I just would like to know the proportion of your homeless that you deal with who would be regarded as minors. And I was really shocked a while ago to hear that there are children as young as 12 who are homeless in Canberra. And do you have special programs that for them to be differentiated from the adults at all?
So government looks at homelessness. We have a minister who looks after homelessness in the ACT, and there is one at the Commonwealth level as well. The Common Ground model looks at from 18 onwards, and of the 46 residents, they start from 18, and the oldest is 68. And some of the residents, there are lots of videos on YouTube, and there's one about Common Ground now that it's working. And one of the older residents, she's beautifully dressed, she's just the most beautiful lady, but to hear her story, you think, how can we let this happen? With the Common Ground model, we have some young women. The mix is nearly half and half women and men. In fact, I think we might have a couple more women, which I think is amazing. But one of the young women has said to me that her apartment is next to one of the older women, and she said, for the first time in my life, I have a mother and a grandmother all in one. Now, you know, I get all teary when I think about some of the stories, but we're making a drip in the bucket, but we're making the drip bigger. So, yes, children are a real worry.
Do you have access or knowledge to what percentage of the homeless in the ACT would have mental health problems? And does that then mean it's hard to find a resolution for them as far as finding a home?
I don't have those figures off the top of my head, but my experience is most of them would have very complex mental health issues, drug and alcohol issues. Richard, who you saw on the film, if you watch Richard's journey through the three videos, he talks about trying to go on a bus. So he says, I walk everywhere because people would think I'm smelly on the bus, and I defend people so I won't catch a bus. He has had lots of mental health issues. And through our videos, he got accommodation, and I was so pleased. And he came to one of the launches of the videos up at Parliament House, And he looked fantastic, and I was so proud, and he was so proud, and he had new clothes on. And then a few weeks later, I hardly recognised him in town. And I said, "Richard, what's wrong?" And he said, "I'm safer on the streets." He said, "Where I am, there's drugs, alcohol, and it's really rough." And he said, "I'm better on the street." So, you know, again, that says to me, common ground is the way forward, because residents are supported with whatever they need. It's not a program that everyone has to go to cooking or everyone has to go and have literacy or financial skills. It's set for each individual, is a program developed around how they want to contribute, not you must contribute. There are some very complex issues that we deal with, even in Common Ground.
Thank you for your inspiring talk this morning. And I really resonate with your saying it's very difficult to decide what to do. And lots of us retire in Canberra and feel so privileged and think we've got a whole third of our lives left. Mm-hmm. What will I do with it? So you've certainly made me think about that. One of the concerns I have about homelessness at the moment that I'd like you to comment on is the phenomenon of older women who are not living on the street, but they're actually homeless because they couch surf, as it's called. I hadn't thought about that until quite recently. Can you talk about that as an issue and what's being done?
It's a huge issue in Canberra. I'm actually starting a conversation. Well, I actually haven't started the conversation. Elizabeth Dawson started the conversation because a number of years ago, homelessness and women weren't captured in any of the statistics and census because women wouldn't put their hand up to say, "This is me," because it was just so embarrassing for them. But now we are collecting data. So the data we've got is actually quite new. But women will sleep in cars. Danielle was to sleep in a car with her six children. And Danielle had a very, very severe stroke. And I lost track of her after she was released from hospital. She was in hospital for 6 months because there was nowhere to put her. Again, another damning statistic. But there's a group of women, mostly, we might encourage a few men to come on board, but at the moment, women who are actually talking about older women and where are we going to house them and how are we going to look after them, because they're still falling through the cracks. So that conversation is happening. There'll be a time when I'll have a bit more around it that I will probably get Hands Across Canberra to put on its website for people to have a look at. But there's a couple of great women that are now looking specifically at what do we do to help older women, because by and large our super isn't good enough. Last night on television was about elder abuse for older people. Let me tell you, in my public trustee experience, I saw it a lot and worked very hard to get the elder abuse phone line set up. I think women, we've got a lot to think about and protect ourselves against.
Thank you. Thank you for your talk. I recall back during the bushfire time in Canberra, and there was a great outpouring of concern. People who had money, who had resources for people who had been so badly threatened, lost through the fires. My concern was that this great outpouring of funds was going to the people who had recently experienced the bushfires, and that was diverting money away from the poor and the needy in the community who were always with us. And I recall going down to St Finian's and to make a donation, and he said, "Oh, you've come to give to the bushfire." And I said, "No, I want to specifically say it is not to go to the bushfire, it is to go to your ongoing programs." And they commented then that they have to take so much of their resources from the ordinary background maintenance role for these emergencies, what I call in geographic terms the lumpy flows. Now, does any of your work towards trying to even out those lumpy flows to make sure that the ordinary, everyday disadvantaged are not neglected when there's this great outpouring of grief?
I think it's always going to happen that, you know, when there is a disaster, wherever it is, that it sparks people's need to help. And so, yes, that will always happen. What I try and do is make the cake bigger. So, you know, we have one charitable cake, as I call it, in Canberra. And as I've said, some of us haven't been asked yet about you actually want to give, but we haven't asked you what you want to give to. And so my idea is if we make that cake bigger and organisations like Hands Across Canberra and Greater Good can get donors to actually put perpetual funds away for organisations who do great work in and around our region, that they do become sustainable on the ground. Or it gives them capacity to take on a new role that they have not been able to do before. Like Mary Mead runs a mentoring program for young women with disabilities. And it could be, you know, Corinna House runs a special program for mums and children. You know, things, if we can make that cake bigger, we can actually grow what we do in our region. So it's the ask that we need to get out there that says Canberra's really worth supporting. We're not as privileged as people around Australia think we perhaps are. But all those little lumpy things called disasters are always going to drain any charity. It's just the way it is, sadly. But let's make the cake bigger.
I think that's a lovely note to think about and to end on, and I'd like you all to join me again in thanking Diane for her incredibly inspiring talk.
Thank you.
The National Museum of Australia in Canberra explores what it means to be Australian through our permanent galleries, exhibitions, public programs, and the National Historical Collection. Find out more about the museum at nma.gov.au or download more audio programs from nma.gov.au/audio.